welcome to another episode of the Stuck in My Mind podcast. I am your host, W-I-Z-E. My next guest is the acclaimed author of The 5-Day Job Search. Welcome to the show, Annie Margarita Yang. Hello.
Will. Hi, Will. Thanks for having me on today.
The pleasure's all mine. How are you doing today?
Quite wonderful.
All right. So let's jump into this. So what inspired you to how did you become the go-to authority in millennial finance?
Well, that's a self-proclamation right there. Yes. Nobody, I'll be very honest though, whenever you write anything for marketing, nobody just wakes up and says, hey, you're so good at what you do. I want to give you an award and make you king of the world, right? You kind of have to call yourself that first before anyone considers you as that. So when I was 20, I decided, you know what? I don't care the fact that I'm working a minimum wage job. I want to help other people with their finances because I was making, what, $8 an hour, but I was still able to save 25 to 50% of my income without ever asking my parents for money. And I was like, I don't understand how people could make more than me, but they're broke and living paycheck to paycheck. So I'm just going to help people with their finances because it's something I was gifted at from with the help of God, right? It comes to me naturally and other people struggle with it. So I want to help them with it.
Okay. So can you share a brief overview of your book, The 5-Day Job Search, and its core principles?
Yeah, a brief overview is it basically starts off with the story of how after I graduated from college with a degree in communications, I was working at Domino's Pizza for $8 an hour. I worked a whole string of part-time jobs on minimum wage. And then when my husband and I, we moved to Boston, I was like, you know, we have a new life here. And because I'm so good at managing our money for our household, why don't I just do this for a business? I mean, it's just the same thing, but on a larger scale. So I started applying to accounting jobs, despite people telling me that I was unqualified and didn't have the formal qualifications for this. So I applied to 50 a day. And then at the end of 7 days, I got an offer. Now, I thought that was just luck. But then in my second job search, I got an offer in only 6 days. And then in my third job search a year after that, I got an offer in only 5 days. So if you can do it 3 times in a row, you know, I think at that point it's skill. I'm onto something here. And the 5-day job search book is basically all the secrets on how I managed to do it.
So what inspired you to write the book specifically tailored for young professionals?
Oh my gosh. You know, the reason is because I'm just really sick and tired of teachers and well-meaning guidance counselors telling young people who are still in high school that in order to be really successful and have a great career, you need to take on all this student loan debt. You know, it's this kind of like prevailing philosophy or mentality that the more money you borrow in student loan debt, let's say you get a marketing degree and $80,000 in student loan debt. I saw a TikTok short on that. they think that like the more student loan debt you take on, then maybe that means you'll be more competitive in the job market coming out. And that's not necessarily the case. And people are graduating without the skills necessary to get even an entry-level job in their field. So that's why it's targeted for young professionals, because I feel like adults, well-meaning adults, are really doing 18-year-olds a huge disservice.
Now, I posted something earlier where I posted something on Facebook where they talked about these are the things you should be teaching in schools. And one was banking, investing, all these different things that aren't taught in schools, like self-development, all like balancing, like, kids don't even know how to balance a checkbook right now.
Yeah, they don't. But to be fair, though, even I think people over 40 don't know how to do it either, because if you check the stats, you know, the vast majority of Americans don't even have $500 to their name. So they're basically just one check away from homelessness, basically. So I don't necessarily agree with teaching it in school, because it's kind of like the blind leading the blind.
You're blind.
Yeah.
But I would think if you are going to teach it, you're going to have people. When I, you can have people who actually have done it teach it.
But but where? You know, have you ever thought about that? Like, how is that going to work? If a finance professional or someone who's really good with money, if I was making
Why would he want to take the pay of a teacher?
Yeah, why would I want to take the pay of a teacher if I can earn six figures doing something a lot more lucrative, right? You know, yeah.
So that's where people like you come along, right?
Yes. So while I don't like necessarily go teach at a school, I want to be where the young people are. So basically for 2024, I'll be focusing a lot more on TikTok. I've been growing my following only solely through YouTube, but I see that a lot more of Gen Z, they're on TikTok instead. So I want to go to where those people are to get my message across. They're not, I feel like even if we taught it in school, because of the kind of disrespect that they have for adults, that kind of like, it's cool to be rebellious and not to listen to adults kind of like culture. Even if you taught the information, they might not be open to what you have to say. But if it's on a cool platform like TikTok, they might be like, you know, she makes sense. She could be like my big sister or something like that.
So how did your approach to financial planning differ from traditional advice?
Well, I'm not a financial advisor, so I'm not going to take somebody's portfolio and then take a 1% fee. This is not how I work. Basically, I'm more of someone who just gives away the information en masse. I also don't do private coaching for anyone. People would come to me asking me to help them make budgets. And I found that, like, honestly, the best thing is if I gave people the advice en masse and they just took what was necessary for their own situation and then they can just discard the rest. Really, I think the best is like God helps those who help themselves. And that kind of philosophy also applies in this case.
So, okay. So with you, obviously, like you said, you're not a financial advisor. So how can millennials strike up a balance between paying off student loan debts and saving for the future?
They have to have a really targeted plan. I feel like whatever people are doing, they're not really focused. So I'm not sure if you've heard of Dave Ramsey. But he is really popular, you know, and he talks about like gazelle intensity, right? And, you know, he has that 7-step plan. First, fund your emergency fund with $1,000. And then after that, don't fund it anymore. Pay off all your debts. Then after you pay off all your debts, fully fund your emergency fund with 6 months to a year's worth of expenses. And then after that, you can invest and save for your future. And I feel like this kind of like baby step thing, while I don't necessarily agree with all of his advice, the gazelle intensity of like focusing on one thing and only that one thing until you hit that target and before you move on to the next, you can use the same thing when helping millennials pay off their student loan debt or saving money, right? You can start with that $1,000. I think these days with inflation, it should be adjusted for $2,000 as an emergency fund. And then after that, you go all in paying off that student loan debt. So in my book, The 5-Day Job Search, I talk about how I went from the second job to the third job, I went from making $45,000 to $80,000. Now, that's a $35,000 pay increase, right? Like if you have no lifestyle inflation whatsoever and you continue to live and act as if you never made that much more money and you just kept living on your old income, right? You can use that difference to pay off your student loan debt. Like if the average person, which is kind of true, like the average person these days coming out of college, they owe 36 grand. Can you imagine, like, if you got a pay increase from 45K to 80K, then you can literally pay off your student loan debt in just a year and a half. And then you can move on with your life. It doesn't have to be something that takes 21 years to pay off. The average person takes 21 years to pay it off.
So with them still living as if they were making $45,000 instead of living as, because now they're making $85,000 a year, right? So instead of acting like you're making 85 now, still live as if you're making 45. Do the same things you were doing when you was making 45,000, and the rest of that money that you're making, use it to pay off your student loan.
Exactly. That's a great summary. And in fact, and for anyone out there complaining like, well, I didn't even start at 45. I started at 25 or 30. I just want to say, like, if you went to college, then think back to the times when you were in college, you lived like you were totally broke, right? Or maybe you lived at home with mom and dad. So if you don't even make 45, then you can go even lower than that and live with your parents and go gung-ho, gazelle intensity at paying off that student loan debt.
I don't think parents want to hear that.
I don't think parents want to hear that. But I mean, if you just did it for 1 year, 2 years, and you paid your parents rent, you know, live with your parents, but pay them a discounted rent or something like that, that could be a potential option. For me personally, because I got married at 21 years old, I moved right in with my husband. So, you know, it's almost like having a roommate. So it's okay. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So hold on 1 second. So what role does mindset play in achieving financial success, especially for millennials? Because we know they're all over the place.
It plays the biggest role, because you know what? I think millennials, but maybe this also applies to all generations, they have this mindset that it's impossible to get ahead. And they genuinely believe that the American dream is dead. That, oh, life was so easy for the baby boomers. They had it made, and then they deliberately made it difficult for us financially. But if you really look back in history, like let's go back 2,000 years, it's the same song and dance. Every generation has had financial inequality problems. And it's always been that small handful of each generation that somehow are able to go from having absolutely nothing to having made something of themselves. That's always been the case, regardless of which country you're in and what time period as well, right? So it's really up to you to correct this mindset. The American dream is still alive and well. That's what I believe. And I think Americans need to take that into account.
And listen, and now more than ever, with the way you can do stuff remotely, you can do stuff digitally, there is so much opportunity right now in what we're doing, especially now, because I'm sure you're with everything. Is it easier for you now with the way everything is digital? Or do you still feel you need to be more intimate in a more intimate setting to do what you're doing?
No, I think, well, it really depends on your line of work. You know, like my neighbor is a social worker, and we both live in a condo building. So I work with him in terms of like managing the condo building. And then I was like, hey, let me show you the financials. I sent you an email. Can you open it on your computer? And he was kind of just like, what computer? I don't own a computer. I do everything on my phone. I was like, you're 43 years old. How do you not live without a computer in this day and age?
But a lot of people live off their phone.
It depends on like your line of work, right? He's in social work. He works with like troubled teenagers. So he doesn't really need to use the computer.
Yeah. Your phone is a computer. Your phone is, it's not like he's doing what I'm doing where I need a desktop. And even though to do a podcast, you don't necessarily need a computer, you can still do it on your phone. But it's some people aren't into the digital age. But something with what, like what you're doing, it's I would think it would be much easier for it to translate into a digital age, whereas like social work is more intimate.
Yeah, I think so. Definitely for office work, administrative work, any sort of that kind of stuff, it's easier than ever before to be able to work from home with just your computer. And then I feel like because marketing, right? A lot of marketing these days is social media marketing, and that kind of work can be done remotely. And the cost, the barrier of entry into this field is so low. Right? Literally all you need is a computer and connection to internet. You can take courses on udemy.com for $12.99 and learn about marketing. And then you can also learn from trial and error as well. So I feel like there's just so much, there's like this abundance of opportunity that people cannot see it.
So for with me, when the pandemic hit, in 2020, when it came here and hit 2020, and I was furloughed from my job and everything, I took courses on Udemy. I took courses on Allison, even Google Office courses, and I started certifying myself in certain things. Like I took editing courses. I got certified as a life coach. There's different things that I did. I took the time to really invest in these things, because that's what it is. That's what stops people a lot of the time, is they don't want to spend the time in wanting to develop and grow. They want instant gratification. They want instant now. And instead of taking the courses and learning things in order for you to really grow and develop, that's the situation a lot of people face now.
Yeah, I think so. And I like what you said there about taking courses and delaying the gratification, because people have called me lucky. I'll be very honest. I get a little offended by that, even though I don't show it publicly. But every time someone like says, oh, well, you got to where you are because of pure luck, or like you just happen to be at the right time, at the right place, you know, and met the right person. And this was like a common criticism of my book from reviewers, scathing reviewers, very jealous of the way my life has turned out. And I have to say, I mean, like, but I've spent like the last 10 years, right, an hour per day improving myself. Mm-hmm. I spent like an hour per day that I wasn't paid for and had to spend my own money to improve myself, to read books from the library, to take courses from Udemy, watch YouTube videos, right? Whatever I could get my hands on, I intentionally always spent 1 hour per day working on something that could be improved, whether that was learning how to edit videos or learning how to edit audio, learning how to make the production value look a lot better, right? Mm-hmm. So many different things that nobody paid me to do and nobody told me I had to do. I just had to do it on my own volition.
And that's the same thing with me.
Yeah.
Is the only way I improved in what I was doing as far as my podcast, my audio, my video, was me taking time, spending hours on YouTube, spending time on other courses that I've taken, because again, I wanted to improve. Like, you just don't go and you're not going to know everything. You're not just going to jump in. I've had to learn a lot of different things. I didn't know anyone who was podcasting, so I had to learn how to be a podcaster. I had to connect with other people, build relationships, learn, ask questions, and eventually things started falling in place. But it took me wanting to learn. I didn't come in thinking that, oh, I'm going to just jump in and my podcast is going to be successful. No, I had to come in, grind, learn how to do thumbnails, how to fill out descriptions, how to optimize the SEOs, all these different things that I didn't have a clue. Didn't know any of that. But I felt that was going to help me improve. That was going to help me make me a better podcaster. So I invested the time in doing it.
I think you did a great job, because looking at your setup right now, you've got everything going for you. You've got a really nice mic, the headphones and all. And you even positioned your mouth at the right distance from the mic, because I watch other podcast hosts, they make that mistake. They sit too far from the microphone, and that doesn't help them with their audio quality. So you got it all down pat.
That's one thing I learned. One of the first things I learned was the difference between a condenser mic and a dynamic mic. Like, a condenser mic picks up more sound everywhere, whereas I'm using a dynamic mic right here, and I have to have it. I have to have my mouth positioned right in a nice spot, right. at least a good distance. You don't have to be up on top of it. You just sit back, sit nice, set it up where you want it, and it projects perfectly for me. But it was me doing the research, me learning about the different mics, me wanting to make sure, like, all right, this is the kind of mic I need. I don't need this mic because I'm not working in this type of space. The space that I'm working in is perfect for what I need. You still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. All right. So let's see. What are some tips for negotiating a better salary or promotion? Because that's something that a lot of people don't really know how to do.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, they pull the numbers out of their butt. Like, hey, I need an increase. I need $10,000 more because I've been at this company for 2 years at this point, you know, or like, I need this much more because of inflation or because my financial situation has changed and I owe extra money on this bill or something like that. They come up with like all sorts of reasons why they need better pay. But I think the best way to negotiate for a better pay is to actually research the market value of what you do, of your title, basically. Like, it's almost like if you go into a seafood restaurant, right? And you look at some of the items on the menu, let's say they had a whole fresh fish, a branzino fish, and it always says market price. There's no set price on the actual menu. You have to ask the server, how much is it for today? Okay, today's price is $35. Tomorrow's price is not the same. The same thing works when you apply for a job or when you're asking for a raise, because this is why it's called a job market. It's supply and demand. There's a buy and then there's a sell. And if you don't know what the range is for today's market, then you're not going to negotiate well. So what I recommend people do is to actually go on Google and type in the job title. So let's say right now I'm a real estate accounting manager, right? You type that into Google, real estate accounting manager salary, Boston, MA. And then you open up all of the different links into a new tab. Let's say there's salary.com, indeed.com, payscale.com, glassdoor.com that gives you salary figures. Now, which one do you trust? See, because there's a wide range and you don't want to use the wrong source. So what I do is I actually open every single one of them and then I copy and paste the lows from each of them into an Excel sheet, then the medians and then the highs. And then I average all the lows, I average all the medians, and then I average all of the highs. That way I have reasonable numbers to work with and there's no like outliers that are skewing these numbers to either extreme. Then you can take this, you go back to your employer and you say, hey, I've been doing this for, I don't know, 10 years. I should actually be paid on the high end of this range here, right? Like if the range is, let's say, 70,000 to 110,000, I'm really experienced. You hardly need to ever tell me how to do my job. In fact, I'm the one consulting you on how to solve problems because I've been doing this for 10 years. I should actually be paid closer to 110,000, not the 70,000 that I'm at from before. So I think that's a better way to negotiate a raise, honestly.
Yeah, it would make more sense for you to go in with actual statistics to prove your point, to be like, listen, this is what the average, whatever position you're in, is making. And this is what my experience dictates and what, you know, the issues, you don't have no issues with them. And it would make sense for you to come with those numbers.
Yeah, that's right. And I think people have always told me in the past to research what the salary should be, but because I always had like outliers, I was like, should I trust this outlier number? Now that I know to average the lows, average the medians, average the highs, and now I'm sharing this with other people, I think people can negotiate with more confidence because honestly, I wouldn't have had the confidence before because I wouldn't know if the numbers could be trusted.
Okay. So we do talk about mental health and all this on the show and everything. Can you share insights on the relationship between personal finances and mental health?
Oh my goodness, Will. This is intimate, like so intimately connected, because if you don't have, well, hello?
I'm here. I'm still here. Yeah. I'm still here.
That's something happened to your camera.
Nope. Go ahead.
Yeah. I feel like if you live paycheck to paycheck and you're broke all the time and it's like stressing you out, it can cause you to go like crazy. You know, I feel like back when I wasn't earning really much and I had to work like, I don't know, 7 days a week just to make ends meet, working 5 part-time jobs at any given time. And then like even in a given day, I had to go to 3 different part-time jobs. It drove me crazy. And after doing that for a whole year, I'll be very honest, I was depressed. You know, I was like, when is this going to end? I feel like I'm always spinning my wheels. And if you don't get mental health, like, help, then you might spiral, I think. They are intimately connected.
Yeah, there is definitely something that is very, it's what causes a lot of problems within even marriages and stuff is finances, is learning how to manage. If both parties in the relationship aren't on the same page, it can definitely put a strain on that relationship and put a strain on your mental health as well.
Yeah, definitely. And that's why, you know, I really like to think of my great-grandfather. So I haven't shared this story very much with most people. But my parents, they're from China. And before the communists took over and just sucked the wealth out of the country, out of private citizens, and took their real estate away, took their businesses away, my great-grandfather actually owned 26 pharmacies, both in China and in like Malaysia, Singapore, Vietnam. Like, he was a really wealthy man and owned a lot of real estate as well. But then the Chinese government took everything away. And when he tried to escape China into Hong Kong, the border patrol asked for a bribe and he didn't have the money. And he's like, if you just let me through to the other side, I could access my other bank accounts in Vietnam and Malaysia. I'll give you the money after I'm out. But they wouldn't help him. So he had to turn around and go back to his hometown. And then, you know, instead of like being strong about it and going like, you know, it's just money. You can earn it again. You can make do. He ended up committing suicide because he lost everything, right? And I just want like people to know, yes, life is difficult when you don't have money, but I mean, why? You know, money is
that's the question. Just, no, that's the question. That's the question a lot of people ask. Like, we don't know what is going through people's minds when they commit suicide. It's especially now, like suicide rates is at a high rate, and especially during the pandemic and. It's crazy that it's something that isn't really tackled here in this country. It's like, oh, they look at it as something that they're not looking at it as a problem. Like, they're just like, oh, people just come in. So they're not really focusing on how can we stop these things. Like, especially we have veterans that come here that are come back from wherever they served and everything, and they're committing suicide at an all-time high. Like, I had a veteran on the other day and he talked about that it says 22 veterans commit suicide a day, and he said actually the number is skewed because it's more like 40 because some of them aren't leaving notes, or so they're not able to identify these people or whatever it is, and so there's so many different reasons why. Like with your grandfather, I could imagine having everything you've worked so hard and it's just taken away from you. There's people here that they've lost their jobs and that was very important to them and they ended up taking. So it's difficult to.
I know, but I just want to say it is possible to build back up.
Of course, it is.
Someone hits rock bottom and they have the mental health issues, it doesn't have to be a permanent state. Like, you can build from there. I mean, the beauty of hitting a rock bottom, you know, and hitting that is there's nowhere left to go but up. Yeah, and you become stronger for it as well.
I agree with you. I agree. Yeah. I'm someone who's hit rock bottom, who's experienced great loss and it would probably been easy for me to give up and hurt myself. I was when I suffered the loss that I suffered, I was in a bad place, but I was able to seek the help that I needed, turn my life around, and get back on my feet. And sometimes I feel as if I'm not a religious person. I am a spiritual person, and I do believe that God doesn't put me in situations that he doesn't think I can handle. So he knew I was capable, that I was strong enough to face the adversities that he put before me. And not everyone is capable of that. There's some people who struggle with that. And yes, it hurts. You want to help as many people as possible get through this and overcome these struggles. But for some people, life is really hard. For some people, they're not strong enough to deal with these circumstances. And it's sad to see the outcome.
Yeah. But you know what? I think the people who do make it and rise above, like you came up from the bottom. I feel like you're spreading your light. That's the amazing thing.
But that I had to go through what I had to go through in order for me to be able to shine now. Mm-hmm. Someone asked me if I regret any of the stuff that happened to me in my life. And my answer was, I don't wish it upon anyone, but it happened and it made me who I am today. It's made me come out and do my show and make an impact on people's lives who have struggled, who have gone through tragedies, who's gone to be able to come out and share my story and have a platform where people can come and share their story and talk about struggles and overcoming those odds and turning their life around and trying to help people. Like it's important that you're out here wanting to teach the millennials and everyone else how to manage their finances, how to turn. Those are things that are very important, because again, a lot of people who struggle with a lot of debt don't know, just get overwhelmed and drowned within this debt. And to be able to provide a platform where someone like you can come on and discuss these issues and talk about how they can change their life around by taking different steps and learning what to do with their finances. And because, like, again, I feel like everyone now, it's Instagram. They want instant gratification. They don't want to work hard and they don't want to see that if you put in the effort and working hard and growing and self-development. And like you said, you've been the last 10 years, you've been putting work into yourself, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And all the people see are the success that you're reaping from now, but they didn't see you doing the 10 years ago. They didn't see you with the 10 years of struggling. And that's what it is. Yeah.
They didn't see me in the years when I remember working at the grocery store, those Jewish mothers coming to the express lane checkout, you know, going like, why aren't you in college? You know, like, and then insulting me for not having gone to college. They haven't seen things like that. They haven't seen me literally cut my finger slicing deli meats. You know, they haven't seen things, all the crazy things that have happened to me. If they had known all the bad things that have happened to me, they wouldn't have wished to have the life that I have had.
And that's with a lot of people. Like, again, it's a testament of you continuing on your path and overcoming the struggles that you've overcome to be where you're at now. That's why coming on and doing podcasts and talking to people like yourself, and it's to show people that, hey, listen, wherever you come from, whatever walk of life you come from, you can turn your life around. And that's the message of the show. This is what I want, regardless of what your background is right now. What are you doing right now? It doesn't matter. It's being able to share your story and people see that, man, they came from nothing. They experienced so much. They to be able to see other people struggle and overcome it is what's most important to me.
And that's the most beautiful thing, actually, because nobody cares about the person who was born with a silver spoon in their mouth. I mean, what good is a story of like somebody who was born to a really good family?
Not everyone's born like that. Yeah.
Went straight to college and then got a good paying job after. It's not like this amazing, dramatic story.
But that's not everyone's story. Everyone goes through struggle. Everyone goes through harsh life. Life is ups and downs, man.
You go through
ups and downs in life. It's how you bounce back from the down.
I have found that I have wealthy clients because I do accounting. So I have a good intimate look at their finances. You kind of see what they spend their money on. You can know what's going on in their life as well, right? And then I see like some people have children that like struggle with, depression, anxiety or something, despite having all the money that they could ever ask for.
Because money is not a solution,
right? Yeah. We always think that like somebody who had a good life, you know, has the money. They must not have any problems, but I've come to realize that money cannot solve, let's say, for example, if you're having marital problems, yes, the number one cause of money fights is finances, but that's not the cause of all fights. It could be miscommunication issues. It could be a values mismatch. Who knows what it is? Money doesn't solve that problem, right? You can use money to look for the solution, to find a therapist or whatever resources you need to solve the problem. But ultimately, the ability to solve the problem is in your character. Yeah. It's the same thing. Same thing if you have like a mental health issue, like, you know, that child that I know about, they spend thousands, I swear, tens of thousands of dollars on different forms of therapy to help their daughter. She still has problems even with all this money and this help. So in the end, she needs to figure out what is the solution for her problem, regardless of money or not. You know, money is something that can solve problems of convenience.
Because you've seen, listen, there's just look at some of the celebrities in the past who've taken their own life, even being successful and having all this money. It's trying to find out what's the issue within the, like, money is not going to help the situation. It makes life easier for certain.
Definitely, just easier.
It makes life easier, but it's not the solution. It's not what's going to make you happy. You have to find that within yourself. You have to find that within, what is it that makes me happy? What is it that, and I feel like a lot of people don't find that. They don't understand, like, what is it that brings you joy? Like being able to find my purpose and live a purposeful life and live a life where, man, this is what I love to do. I love doing my podcast because I love to make an impact. I my goal is to impact people's lives, and that's why I do my podcast. It's to be able to share these messages, is to be able to show people that, hey, regardless of where you come from, regardless of what you've experienced, things can look up. Things can change for you. It's all into how you go attack it, or however you bounce back from whatever the tragedies that you're going through. And it's not easy. It's definitely not easy, but it can be done. And for me, when I was going through my struggles, I knew I need to go sit down and speak to someone and find a solution that way. And that's what's been able to help me turn my life around.
Yeah, I think the thing is, though, the great thing you did is you sought help.
Yeah.
Right. Some people, like, there are people I have known who I try to help, but unless they're ready to get the help, they don't take it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I have so many people I know that I have gone out of my way to offer help, but they don't want it. I think some people need to learn from their own mistakes before they ask for help. So,
yeah. They definitely have to be receptive to the help. If they don't want to choose, you can't force anyone. Like, it's that, like that saying, you can bring the horse to the water, but you can't force them to drink it.
That's
like,
right.
So, but Annie, thank you so much for being a guest. Now you get the part, it's now where you get the solo screen and you get to plug away and let everybody know where exactly they can find you, where they can get the book, everything.
The best way to find me is on www.annieyangfinancial.com. That's AnnieYangFinancial.com. And also, if you want, you can get the 5-day job search audiobook for free. It's also on AnnieYangFinancial.com. At the top of the homepage, just click on audiobook, put in your name, your email address, and you can download the 5-hour book.
And you also, you have a YouTube channel, don't you?
That's right. I have a YouTube channel. You can follow me on YouTube, though I've been getting censored and shadow banned these days, despite having an 18,000 subscriber following. YouTube has not been pushing out my videos to even my own subscriber base. So that's why I recommend you head over to Annie Yang Financial and get on my mailing list to stay in touch.
Yes. And that's something that's very important. That's something I tell a lot of podcasters is to build a email subscription, collect emails and send these are things that I've learned I've learned in the past, but I started actually implementing this past year. And it's helped my podcast grow, being able to send a weekly newsletter and just automating a lot of different things. So it's important that you do build your email list. It's and that way, like, again, you can have direct impact to your clients and for me it's my audience. But thank you so much, this has been great. I appreciate you being the guest.
Thanks for having me on tonight.
But don't leave just yet. Let me close out the show and me and you can chat a little bit off air. But thank you. All right. Shout out to everybody who's in the chat. Drew Willingham, Facebook user. I don't know who you are, but thank you for coming through. Shout out to everybody on Instagram, because I've been using Instagram the last 3 days now that StreamYard allows us to stream to Instagram. So I'm excited about that. That's a whole different audience. Shout out to the Real Wise fam, Poppy J, Brandy J. Love you guys. Shout out to the Boss Lady. Appreciate you and love you. And as always, a big, big shout out to all the essential workers out there. God bless you. Be safe. You know your boy Wise does it. Peace out.